Hey, everybody. My name is Damara West, and I'm founder of Be Well, Beautiful Woman, where we help women to center their healing and their liberation so that they can lead and live on their own terms. I am delighted to welcome you in to the Women Who Write to Liberate Summit, which is comprised of female writers and those that support the craft of writing to inspire women just like you to find their authentic voice and use it in ways they feel most inspired to, including but not limited to writing their first book or their next. And today I have Drs. Janae Steele and Charmika Newton on the lineup, who just co-authored the amazing book, Black Lives Are Beautiful, 50 Tools to Heal from Trauma and Promote Positive Racial Identity. Let me tell you a little bit about these queens. Dr. Charmika Newton is a fully licensed psychologist and clinical assistant professor and director of the school counseling program in the College of Human Education and Human Development at the University of North Dakota. Dr. Newton is also the owner of Legacy Mental Health Services, PLLC, and she has over 10 years of experience in the clinical, the academic, and community settings, including teaching experience at both undergraduate and graduate levels of higher education. Her areas of expertise include multicultural counseling, research methods, test and measurement, career counseling, and clinical supervision of master's level counseling practitioners and students. In addition to her clinical and teaching expertise, Dr. Newton is also a member of the Michigan Board of Psychology, appointed by Governor Gretchen Whitmer, and she is a sought-after psychology expert featured in prominent magazines and newscasts all over the globe. Let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Janae Steele. Dr. Janae Steele is a licensed professional counselor, counselor educator, and diplomat of the Academy of Cognitive and Behavioral Therapies. Dr. Steele is also the owner and clinical director of Kalamazoo Cognitive and Behavioral Therapies, where she provides therapy, supervision, and training in CBT. She's the author of the upcoming book, Racism in African American Mental Health, Using Cognitive Behavioral Therapy to Empower Healing. And as I shared with you before, the co-author of the book that we're going to be exploring that has those 50 tools to help to support us in creating a positive racialized identity. Her other scholarly activity includes peer-reviewed articles focused on CBT, social justice advocacy, and counselor training. Dr. Janae Steele and Dr. Charmika Newton, I am so glad that you are here for the Women Who Write to Liberate Summit.
Thank you so much for having us. We're so excited.
Yes. I'm so excited as well. So let's dive in to positive racial identity development. Talk to us about what it is and why it's so important to our liberation.
Yeah. Char, do you want to go first?
Sure. I would say that racial identity development is important because it's a process by which individuals are able to, particularly people of color who have experienced oppression and racism, they're able to find their voice, and they're also able to be liberated from the oppression that they've experienced. And so through building a core sense of self and appreciating one's racial identity, there's healing that can come from that. And I feel like individuals, they can't reach their full maximum potential, or what I like to say, live abundant lives without actually loving oneself and having that positive racial identity development. So I think that that's one reason why it's key.
Yeah. And this is so good. And Dr. Steele, of course, if you want to chime in as well, you know, I say often that you cannot be a person of color in this country and not have internalized racial oppression, right? And if we're walking around with internalized racial oppression and we're allowing that to shape our narrative, it's interfering with our ability, right, to be our highest self. And so that's why in part, right, this body of work is so essential to Black people. Dr. Steele, did you want to add anything about that?
Yeah, I think what I would add is that racial identity refers to the amount of belongingness one feels toward their racial group. And so like Dr. Newton mentioned, it offers us a way to heal from those traumas that both you and her are talking about that we experience as racialized minorities in our society. But it also serves as a protective factor when people have a positive sense of racial identity, they are able to withstand and be more resilient toward or against those negative messages that they receive from society, and also against those direct experiences that they might have with racism or other forms of oppression that might also be influenced by one's racialized identity.
Yeah. And this is so good because we know that the lived experience of racism is something that we have to encounter, you know, every day. There are countless choices that we have to make about how we're going to see something, about how much energy we're going to give to it. And if we're consistently giving our power away based on this negative but very real experience that we're having, then it's preventing us, right, to living as fully as possible. And so, you know, for people out there who might be listening and saying, well, gosh, you know, like racism, like that doesn't exist, right? That doesn't matter. Why are we talking about having a racialized identity? That's a given. You know, what do you have to say to people that are coming from that position?
Well, I would say, as recent social unrest has illustrated for us, that racism definitely still exists. But, you know, I think people who suggest that argument might do so based on the idea that overt experiences of racism might actually be less common than they were, you know, in previous decades. So perhaps people aren't being lynched as openly as they were in the past, or you might not experience like an onslaught of racial slurs as openly as people of color may have in the past. But we do still experience racism in many significant ways in our contemporary society, whether that be like denial of loan applications, less perceived credibility, even though our credentials might be the same or even greater than those who belong to dominant racial groups. All of these things are still racism, and they still have a negative impact on the way that we're able to live our lives and to express ourselves as individuals.
Yes. I couldn't have said it any better. And I just want to like give you a snap on that. Dr. Newton, is there anything that you want to add to follow up to what Dr. Steele has just shared?
Yeah, most definitely. There's intergenerational trauma that comes from racism. You can't enslave a people for a century and it not impact the family system, the way people think about themselves and how they function within society. And so I think a lot of times, you know, again, as Dr. Steele mentioned, you may not see people getting lynched, or it may not be as in your face, but the spillover or the intergenerational trauma that comes from experiencing the impact of racism is often felt on the mental health. And even we know the research shows it impacts, racism impacts people's physical health, high blood pressure, even mental health, anxiety that individuals may experience, PTSD type symptoms. So I think, you know, when people say that, we need to look at it from a broader perspective of how it's impacted various systems and particularly the family system.
Yeah. And I really appreciate the various ways that you have both described about how racism really lives in our bodies. And, you know, I appreciate that when we talk about trauma, we're talking more and more about racialized trauma and what that does to individual in living their most optimal lives. And, you know, it makes me think about Dr. Joy DeGruy-Leary's body of work called Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, and that, you know, this ancestral trauma from all of these years of oppression, we're carrying that forward. And so we may not even be aware, right, that we're carrying it forward. It reminds me of something that I heard Harriet Tubman, you know, had said, that I would have freed more people if they had only known, right, that they were slaves. But I think that your body of work is an invitation to Black people to get free, right? To get as free as what we choose to be based on whatever our desires are. So let's transition a little bit now. And I want to talk in context of the book, and not giving it all away, of course, because you have 50 strategies. There'd be no way for you to do that. What are some of those strategies that we can utilize that you've written about in order for us to step in more to that positive racialized identity?
Yeah. Well, as you indicated, 50 is quite a bit, but we actually tried to break them down into different types of strategies that individuals can select from based on their unique experiences with racial trauma or where they're at in the development of their racial identity development. So we've looked at ways people can heal from racial trauma. We've looked at ways people can bolster their self-esteem. We've looked at ways that people can increase their resilience and ways that they can facilitate community bonds as well as personal empowerment.
Yeah, I love how you all have broken it down into categories based on an individual's situation, right? Because we don't all move through life the same and have the same kinds of experiences. And we're not all on the same, you know, wave, if you will, in terms of our racialized identity. Some of us may be further along and yet be able to benefit immensely from strategies based on wherever one might be within their trajectory. Dr. Newton, anything else you want to share about those strategies?
Yeah, no, that we just really used a holistic perspective. Some of them are based upon really challenging internalized racism and the thoughts that one individual has. So I'll give you a little teaser. One of the strategies looks at proud moments where we ask African-Americans to identify like proud moments, because many times society is anti-Black, where, you know, Black is, people are defined as being deviant or unintelligent. And so one of the strategies called Proud Moments, we ask individuals to create like an ancestry wall or an area in their home where they highlight or they honor individuals within their family that have contributed to proud moments for themselves. And so it kind of is shifting the narrative that we as Black people often are given and looking at ourselves from a different lens or different light.
I love that, that you're asking people to lean into this idea of celebrating those who came before us, right? And particularly if you know, we've had trauma, not just, you know, racialized trauma, but any form of trauma within our family context, it can be hard, right? To be able to see the beauty that exists within the midst of that pain. And yet you're inviting people in to find, right? To find some things that they can celebrate. And there's always things that people can lean into and acknowledge. And so the fact that you packaged it within this ancestry wall, I love it. And I'm sure there are lots of juicy strategies as well that you're not going to give us right now because we got to buy the book, right? All right. So let's talk about, you know, the fact that, you know, 50 strategies, it's really robust. And, you know, I know that you both are researchers and have been in that space for quite some time within the clinical realm. And so talk to us about, you know, how you landed on these strategies. How did you know that these were the right strategies to help to people have racialized liberation?
I think, you know, to illustrate what Dr. Newton just talked about in the example tool that she discussed, is that we looked at, you know, what the evidence says about how people can heal from trauma, how they can develop positive racial identities. But we also looked at what is authentic to an African-centered worldview. So for example, in the Proud Moments or Heritage Wall exercises, we really looked at, okay, if it is consistent, culturally consistent with an African-centered worldview to embrace your heritage, to draw on the experiences of your ancestors, how can we incorporate that into this body of work as well to help people begin to heal in a way that is consistent from a psychological perspective, but also from a spiritual and truly liberatory perspective as well?
That's powerful. Dr. Newton?
Yeah, and I think also a lot of the activities draws upon Dr. Still and I's clinical experience, like having close to 15 years of experience working with people of color. We've often in our offices experienced the hurt that individuals come in with as a result of experiencing race-based trauma. And so using that, we've developed things that we have found in our clinical practice that really helps individuals heal and develop positive racial identity development. So a lot of it does come from our own clinical experience.
Yeah, beautiful. And I'm not gonna, we won't explore this now, but I want you all to think about this before I jump into my next question. how you all have used these strategies in order for you to also step more deeply into having a positive racialized identity for yourself, right? I recognize that as a clinician, you know, you're bringing years of experience, both in person and also in the research realm that led to this book. And a little bit later, I want y'all to think about this. Share with us exactly how these strategies have helped to elevate you, unless y'all want to get into it right now, because I know that was not one of my core questions. All right, yeah. Let y'all think about it. Let me let y'all think about it for a second.
Okay.
All right. Okay, good, good, good. So let's get into this next question. You know, writing a book on your own, that's one thing. And no small feat, only 3% of the population ever writes a book. But you did so together, right? And so that is a different beast. Talk to us about your process, including the strengths and challenges of co-authorship, conception, publishing, and anything else you want to talk about your co-authorship journey.
Would you like to go first?
I think when you're co-authoring, when you're working with another individual, it's important to first identify your strengths and then also then to identify the strengths of the person that you're working with. Because when you're just working by yourself, you know you and you know what your work style is. And so like for myself, I'm like a taskmaster. When I go to meetings, I like to get a task, have a deadline, and complete it. If I don't have a deadline, my anxiety goes up because it's too big a project, right? And so I know that's the way I work. And so because Dr. Still and I have worked together for a while now, we've learned each other's work style. And I think having like a conversation around that is important when you're working with someone else. The other thing I would say is to know your value system, like as it relates to your writing, as it relates to your publication. Like for me with this book, one of my values was really being true to honoring Black identity and honoring Black culture. And so one of the kind of, I'll say, challenges we ran into with the book was the publisher gave us certain images for the cover art, and those images weren't very representative of what we were talking about as it relates to Black identity, Black culture. And so in order to stick with my value of honoring Blackness and being true and respecting the culture, I had to take it to upon myself to elicit like an artist to actually design the cover. And Dr. Still totally supported it. But that was just a value that I had with this writing. And so we enlisted an artist from Kalamazoo, Nicole Lee, and she designed the cover for us so that we were able to respect our identity and respect Blackness. And so I think, you know, working with publishers, you also have to consider, you know, how much of what they're offering is culturally responsive to.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, and then hearing you say, Dr. Newton, that, you know, you and Dr. Steele already had this history, right? There was a level of respect for each other, of understanding. And so if, you know, folks are out there and wanting to come together, that foundational work, it sounds like, is absolutely critical so that you can really be in flow and put your energy into writing a masterful book. Dr. Steele?
Yeah, I would say the biggest benefit of co-authorship has been for me accountability. I have a different style, I'd say, than Dr. Newton. I'm very much like, whenever it hits me, then I'll write it, then it'll be done. She likes to get things done as quickly as possible. So it gave me the pressure I needed to stay on task and to be more timely in my submissions, but not pressure in a negative way, just pressure in a way that I did not want to disappoint her. And so I think that, you know, speaks to what you were saying in terms of the importance of having a level of respect and care for the person, pre-existing respect and care for the person that you're working with before entering into this enterprise with someone. I think one of the things that I've learned is that it is much more heavy than one might anticipate, especially if you've had experience writing in other ways. So for example, if you write blogs or if you write articles, writing a book is a completely different beast. And so you will learn and you will have moments where you struggle, and it's really nice to be able to have someone to walk with you as you're working through that.
Yeah. You know, that's beautiful. And I'm sure you all want to, you know, contribute some other things to this conversation about the question that I raised. And, you know, I shared with you all that I'm working on my first book, Me Too, a Therapist's Journey to Heal from Complex Trauma and Find Liberation and Joy. And I have written countless blogs. I have written all kinds of things. And when I sat down to write this book, I was like, oh, I didn't actually have as much as I thought I did, right? I'm really having to kind of write from scratch in a lot of ways. And even the way that I frame, you know, things and, you know, dialogues that have to be fleshed out and, you know, all of these considerations that I didn't have at the forefront because I didn't need to as a blogger. And so I so appreciate you putting that out there and helping our listeners to appreciate that writing a book is different, that even you certainly have great, you have some leverage, right? If you've written in these other means, but it is something altogether different that we have to brace ourselves for. And, you know, the fact that Dr. Newton could play as a accountability piece for you is so beautiful. And, you know, I have a coach that serves as that for me, for people who are on that individual authorship journey that are listening. So Dr. Newton, Dr. Steele, is there anything else that you want to share about your lessons learned, your creative process, challenges, marketing, publishing, that the listeners may want to tune into?
I would say for me, something that stands out is the importance of not being too hard on yourself, and then also understanding that every experience is valuable, even if it doesn't go the way that you want it to go, because it's a learning experience and it positions you for your next experience. So for example, Dr. Newton talked about the cover art for our book. I think we were both expecting like a lot of energy from the publisher to be devoted toward the cover art, but that wasn't it at all. It was very much kind of like a cookie cutter approach. So, you know, having had that experience, we can take that into anything we might approach in the future in terms of clarifying that with the publisher beforehand, or at least developing like a plan of action on our part if we choose to work with the same publisher. So I think something else I would just add as it relates to the writing process is just remembering to give yourself grace, and then also to remembering to value like each part of what you experience throughout the process, whether it seems positive or negative at the moment.
Yeah. I love this commitment to just the journey and the unfolding of it. And also this invitation for people who are listening to be considerate of every single facet of what's going to go into putting our stories out there in the ways that we're feeling compelled to, right? Like you said, who would have thought that the publisher wasn't going to take this seriously? And yet, they didn't take it as seriously as what you wanted them to. And the beautiful way that you all were just able to lean into finding a solution. And I know that artist, and I know that she does amazing work. And so how beautiful that you were able to also bring her in on the project to illuminate her artistry that was in alignment with this deep sense of the messaging that you wanted to put out there to the world in alignment with Black liberation. Dr. Newton?
Yeah, I was going to add is that I think us even finding that artist through our work, we've thought of ways in which we can empower other individuals. So our writing can empower individuals. For example, the artist who I mentioned, we were able to empower her and provide like affirmation for her by including her in on our project. And I think that's important for us to do as writers, to see how we can incorporate other people, because I think that's how we heal and that's how we grow as a community. The other thing I was saying as you're writing, I think, or thinking, having like brainstorming sessions. Just yesterday, Dr. Still and I had a brainstorming session with a doctoral student that we're working with on another project, just to kind of process out where we were at with our writing for it. And I think that is so key, because when you get people who are doing the work with you, you begin to think about and see things differently and share resources. Like, you don't have to be in a bubble writing and doing this by yourself. You can pull in other individuals who have insight and knowledge, and that just makes your project even more impactful.
Yeah. You know, and what's lovely about what you're saying is that sometimes we want to keep our work really close to us, right? It's like, ooh, you know, I can't let anyone in. And yet You know, I say often that, you know, people are really our number one pathway to prosperity that source, universe, God uses to get us to where we're trying to go. And so we don't want to keep our work so close that we don't see the gifts that are being presented to us to help to support us on our journeys. And so the fact that you all just had that experience, divine timing, if you ask me, since we're in this space. So I'm sure you're still pondering that question I asked earlier, so we won't get into that just yet. But what I do want to talk about is, you know, as therapists, you're consistently helping people to navigate through their challenges. How do you center your own liberation in the midst of others? And so you could lean into that question I asked in conjunction with this, but we also don't have to touch it just yet, right? So just your overall liberation, how do you stay grounded in your power and in your own truths as you are supporting so many people in the world, both clinically and through the written word?
Mm-hmm. I'd say for me, you know, as a therapist, I am really committed to this idea that our various identities influence the development of our worldviews, and our worldviews influence the way we understand our problems and how we heal from them. And so for me, liberation is about freedom to live according to our worldviews and our beliefs. Because that is so central to my belief, I can say that one way it has been expressed in my work with clients is through my willingness and commitment to engage those conversations with my clients, no matter what their racial identity is, because I understand that these issues affect all people. So I think, for example, previously I might limit these conversations to my work with clients of color, but I also now include them with the white clients that I see as well, particularly the men, ironically, because this is central to who I am. Like, I understand that this is part of, this has been part of liberation for me, and I believe it's part of liberation for all people. So why not include this in my work with those clients as well? So for example, I'll be able to talk to them about ways white supremacy influences the ways that they think about their problems, and how white supremacy may be in conflict to whatever their authentic value system might be in that situation, and ways that they can kind of identify that and deconstruct it.
Yeah, that's lovely that you said that, because, you know, I mean, the whole reason why people are coming to see you is because they're looking to be free, right, from something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure you don't coin yourself as an anti-racist clinician, and yet you know for certain that there are moments when you have to lean into that in order to help to set your people free. And it's an area that I'm sure many clinicians won't touch at all. And yet, you know, based on your own work, that if we don't talk about it, if we don't face it, we can't change the things that we're not willing to face. And so thank you for being so tenacious about that and allowing your clients from all walks of life to be able to understand their unique role in liberating themselves, so that they're not operating in ways that are counter to what it means to be fully human. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dr. Newton?
Yeah. And I think for myself, I have this concept, doing what brings me joy. So part of liberation is, you know, the world for people of color has tried to steal that joy and take away that joy through various forms of racism and discrimination. So what kind of keeps me grounded as a clinician is finding what brings me joy. If that is going on a walk with my son, if that is planning a vacation to Orlando, I find those things that bring me joy. And I also try to find the joy in the work that I'm doing. So knowing that, you know, writing a book such as this can empower and can be self-help for an individual, I think that that is key, and that's freeing, and that brings me joy. So a lot of times the work that I do around race, I don't consider it work. Like, I've worked at places before, I'm like, this is really work. I don't enjoy this, but I actually enjoy the work that I do now. And I think that that just is a total game changer for me, because I know that there's healing that can come from people reading and engaging in what we're doing.
Yeah, you know, passion and empowerment, they're the two highest vibrational emotions that exist along with joy, right? Joy, empowerment, gratitude. And so, you know, knowing that we're all energetic sources, right? And we emit a frequency, right, based on what we feel. And even just this expression of joy, that can be a very vulnerable thing. And I love that we're talking more and more and more about joy and putting this focus, particularly on Black joy, right? Because you know, I think that we have, you know, fed into this narrative that we don't have time, right? We don't have time for rest. We don't have time for play. We don't have time. And it's like, well, but if I'm not making time now, how am I living my life as fully as possible? So the fact that you've given yourself the gift of being fully aligned with your purpose, which allows you to be in your passion, which allows you to have joy at the forefront, what's more liberating than that, right? Truly, what's more liberating than that? So, doctors, as we get ready to wrap up, and before we let the audience know how they can stay in touch with you, I'm going to come back to that question that I threw in, that curveball. How have these strategies that you're gifting the world with helped you to become more liberated as a Black woman?
I'd say work around critical consciousness has been most impactful for me. Just increasing awareness of like what these value systems are that are associated with differing worldviews and how they may or may not support my growth as an individual has been eye-opening, and it allows me to be more intentional in making choices about how I think about myself and how I behave and how I interact with others. So, you know, even as a simple example, I think my name and comfort around telling other people what my name is, like that has been a process for me. Previously, I would think like, oh, I gotta tell people my name is Janae and they're gonna think it sounds so Black, or they might have like all these preconceived notions about a person who might have a name that sounds like that. So through just growing and understanding about having a norm that's centered on whiteness and how I don't have to choose to participate in that has freed me around that. So at least going into situations, I'm not anxious anymore, right? Because we know when we're anxious, we're not being our true selves because we're hiding, we're avoiding, we're trying to behave in ways that we think will be perceived as acceptable to the receiver. So that's one example of the ways in which this subject has been impactful in my own life.
Yeah. And Dr. Newton, before you take us home on this question, I want to say really quickly what is so valuable about what you just imparted is that, you know, we don't, of course, just get it from people who don't look like us. Sometimes people that are also that have a Black racialized identity will say, you can't do that. You can't say that. You can't dress that way. You can't show up this way because of our own internalized racial oppression. And so it's so powerful to choose for ourselves. What does it mean to fully honor the fullness of our identity, including this beautiful name that you've been given, right? And to honor it and to allow that to just be what it is and to relish in it is something that is deeply liberatory. And, you know, and particularly as we know, you know, just academia alone, I'll never forget, and I don't know if we were in graduate school together at this time, Dr. Steele or not, but I'll never forget hearing Dr. Johnson say, I made it, right? Like, you know, after all this was said and done, I stayed intact because this institution, and when I say this, I'm talking about the institution of a system, has worked to deprive me of my Blackness, my fullness. And wow, what a journey it's been for me to say, I can exhale a little bit now. And what just occurred to me is that your book is really about allowing people to just breathe, to breathe through the fullness of every part of who they are and to celebrate it as fully as they feel called to do while they are on this planet. Dr. Newton.
Yeah, I would say this book and the work that we're doing, it has caused me to really show up in spaces more as authentically me. Being transparent, I've dealt with internalized racism, and I would do things like when I would come to important presentations like this or important events like this, I would wear my glasses because I was like, then they'll think I'm smart, right? They'll think I'm smart and I'll be valid. And well, today I didn't show up with my glasses on because I'm showing up as authentically Char. And so showing up as me versus buying into those messages that the world will give us about Black people is something I don't do anymore, right? And so just doing the opposite reaction of what racism and what internalized racism would have us do is something that I've been working on and just encouraging even my clients to work on, as well as showing up authentic, like
Yeah.
who you are.
Yeah. And so thank you for sharing that, right? Because that's real. And I imagine that every single person on the planet can attest to that, right? This being who we are not in order to survive, in order to feel like we have to do that to survive. And what you just shared is that through your own liberation, you're helping your people to also liberate. You know, and I say often that the people that are waiting on us, and the people that can will vibe with us and that see us and value us and that celebrate us can go with us within our true self, right? And if that means a nose piercing, right? If that means a tattoo, if that means whatever that means, and the world is waiting on us to show up within our authentic self. And I say oftentimes our authenticity is not only connected to our community, our real aligned community, it's also connected to our coin, right? And it's connected to our liberation and abundance, as you just talked about when we started this interview. So, doctors, we have come to the end of our interview. I'm always shocked that because there's always a beginning and an end, right? I don't know why I'm shocked about that. So, let the listeners know how they can stay in touch with you and how they can purchase this amazing book that you all have recently launched together.
Yeah, I think the easiest ways to purchase the book are through Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. And you can stay in touch with me via email. That'd probably be the most direct form of communication. So my email address is jsteele@kalamazoocbt.com.
Beautiful. Dr. Newton.
And for viewers, my easiest way to contact, you can just contact me through my website, which is my name, drcharnewton.com. So.
Beautiful. So all that contact information is available to you all, right? And we'll have a link for you to purchase that book with ease, because we this is all about ease. Accessibility is about ease. Can I get to it? Can I listen to it? Can I purchase with ease? So we're going to make sure that you have an opportunity to do that. Dr. Steele, Dr. Newton, thank you, thank you, thank you for saying yes to this, for sharing your message with the world. And I know that your book is going to be deeply transformative. And I'm just claiming that it's going to be in every university across this country. And we just going to create a whole class, right? A whole class around this book. I don't know what your vision is, but clearly that's my vision for your book.
We receive
So wonderful. So beautiful people, you heard it here during the Global Women Who Write to Liberate Summit. Make sure that on top of this video, you listen to the 18 others that come directly to your inbox to help you to liberate, live your life the way that you want to, tap into your authentic voice as a way for you to have the biggest manifestation flex that exists, right? If we can talk about it, we can influence it. If we can talk about it, we can bring people along. If we can talk about it, we can get the help that we are deserving of. Until next time, beauties, Ashe.